Good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock, and you are tuned in to KTOO News in Juneau here on Wednesday, the 21st of September, the year 2011. Jeff Brown with you here on a Juneau afternoon. Today we'll talk with organizers involved in Saturday's Coast Guard Family Association's 70s party. Katrina Pearson from Hearthside Books will be here to talk about book groups and banned books week. We'll tackle the subject of high school football, and we'll also get a preview of some of this weekend's live music offerings with Sean McColl and Joe Carson at Writers' Almanac Music and more today on a Juneau afternoon. The forecast for tonight looks like there's a high wind and warning in effect until 8 p.m. this evening. Otherwise, the forecast for tonight calls for strong winds, rain heavy at times, low temperatures around 45 degrees.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A traveling public forum in British Columbia, Canada is taking place in communities along a 500-mile stretch of highway. They're aimed at how police conducted investigations into missing women over the past 50 years. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, most of those women were Aboriginal.
The seven forums are taking place along Highway 16, where as many as 40 young women have been murdered or have disappeared since 1960. It's been dubbed the Highway of Tears. Most public speakers called for swift action. Many of them were family and friends of victims who tearfully described their stories of loss. Some have even called for an Amber Alert system similar to that which occurs when a child is abducted or is missing. One local politician, Robin Austin, talked about some of the differences in how police respond to the disappearances and how they revealed divisions within many communities.
I was in the car driving a young Aboriginal woman. The radio had the news the young boy abducted from his home in Sparwood. He was delivered back to his home safely. And this young woman, who is First Nations, turned to me and said, "Wow, I guess that Amber Alert worked, and he's safe because he's white."
Several groups have withdrawn from formal proceedings after the province said it would not pay their legal expenses. Others have called for more police in northern communities, and some have said that little has been done since a 2006 symposium into the tragedies. Among those recommendations was the creation of a public shuttle between communities, warning signs along the highway, an emergency phone service where there is no cell phone coverage, and a response team for First Nations people who report missing relatives. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
The Cherokee Nation and freedmen have reached an agreement over the upcoming election for principal chief. As KGOU's Kurt Gortney reports, the proposal comes just before a federal court was going to step into the issue.
Attorneys for the descendants of the slaves, called freedmen, and a news release from the tribe say the agreement will allow voting in Saturday's election to continue as planned, while also extending walk-in voting to October 8th. The extension was so there is time to notify qualified voters and allow them to participate. The preliminary agreement came Tuesday afternoon after a hearing in a Washington, D.C. federal court. U.S. District Judge Henry Kennedy was set to deliver a ruling on whether Saturday's election for principal chief could continue without participation by the freedmen. The judge gave both sides until 10 Wednesday morning to formalize the agreement. Acting Principal Chief Joe Crittenden said the plan should win approval from the Bureau of Indian Affairs and maintain the tribe's government-to-government relationship, while also restoring $33 million in federal funding the Housing and Urban Development Agency is holding back until the Freedmen issue is resolved. For National Native News, I'm Kurt Gortney in Oklahoma City.
Groundbreaking on the very first Veterans Affairs-funded tribal cemetery has taken place on the Rosebud Reservation in South Dakota. Currently, Rosebud-based Native American veterans and their families must travel over 3 hours to the closest national cemetery in the Black Hills. But a $7 million grant allows veterans to be buried closer to home. Charles Michael Ray reports.
Orlando Morrison Sr. is the director of the Tribal Veterans Program for the Rosebud Sioux Tribe. He says this new cemetery keeps vets closer to home and allows for more culturally appropriate burials, including Native American ceremonies that he says can't always take place at the current National Cemetery in the Black Hills.
Then you only allow something like 15 minutes, I believe, to bury somebody over there at the National Cemetery. And, of course, we require a lot more time, you know, due to our culture.
Morrison says he hopes construction of the first phase of the new cemetery is completed by the spring of 2013. For National Native News, I'm Charles Michael Ray in Rapid City, South Dakota.
During this month in 1971, the Tanana Chiefs Conference was officially incorporated in Alaska. Its purpose includes advancing tribal government, economic and social development, and protecting traditional and cultural values. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. With funding by the Washington, D.C., Albuquerque, and Alaska law firm of Sanosky, Chambers, Saxe, Anderson, Miller, and Munson. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
Time is 3:06, and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. First guests are from the Coast Guard Family Association, Christy Terry, Melissa Loken, and Amanda Rue. They're here to talk about a Coast Guard 70s party. Thank you very much for coming down to the station, everybody.
Thanks, Jeff, for having us.
Thank you.
So first of all, tell me about the the Coast Guard Family Association, please, Melissa, or Christy.
Oh, well, our association has been in Juneau since at least the 1950s. Membership is open to the public, not just to people associated with the Coast Guard. Membership is $20 a year. And we're really trying to recruit locals to strengthen our association. We suffer a 2 to 4 year turnover because of the majority of our members transfer to other duty stations. And local knowledge and local connections are needed for our events and our clubs to be successful. We have every year we have a decade theme party. This year will be the 70s, and Melissa will talk more about that. We also have a Halloween party, pancakes with Santa, stocking stuffers, which benefit local Juneau kids, and Amanda will talk about that. We have Secret Pals, a movie club, dinner and theater club, and a gourmet club, book club, and a craft club. And if you want more information, contact jcgmfa@gmail.com.
Now you have to say that one more time, please.
jcgmfa@gmail.com.
Thanks, Christy.
You're welcome.
And Melissa, you want to talk about the Saturday night event?
Yeah, we're having a 70s party at the Baranoff. The doors open at 7. We're going to have fondue, costume and dance contest, door prizes. There's a no-host bar, and it's $25 per person and $40 per couple. And it's to help raise money for the Christmas stockings for Juneau's children in need. And tickets are available at retrojuneau@gmail.com or at the door. It's going to be a groovy time.
Yeah.
You have to say words like groovy if you're talking about the 70s.
Well, groovies, I think, is 70s, isn't it?
Yeah.
Close enough.
Yeah.
And Amanda, you want to talk about the Stocking Stuffers charity, please?
Yes, I do. The Christmas Stocking Project is something that the association has been doing for many years. We raise money and we take in donations from people all over the community, from dentists to doctors and grocery stores, and individuals give cash. And we take the money and the items that we get, and we provide stockings for needy children in Juneau. We usually contract through the Aware Shelter. We do Love, Inc., the St. Vincent de Paul's, as well as Yaku School. And we take their numbers and their ages of all the children that they have there, and we provide stockings for them every single year.
What kind of things go into the stockings?
Last year we did I think we did a little over 200 stockings, and we get like gift cards from McDonald's, and they always get new toothbrushes, and they always come with a toy. For the older kids, we encourage like donations of gift cards for like iTunes, and the younger kids usually get like clothes and onesies, and we also provide for children at Yaku's that are either pregnant or having children. We make their unborn baby stockings as well.
Sounds like a great thing to do.
It is a great project.
If people would like to contribute somehow, how could they do so, other way if they can't make the party on Saturday?
I think if you just email us at retrojuneau@gmail.com.
Oh, I'm sorry. You could do that, too.
That would be easier. retrojuneau@gmail.com.
Or you could email. I'm the head of the Stocking Stuffer Project, and my name is Amanda Rue, R-U-E, and my email is amandarue1@hotmail.com.
The 70s party is on Saturday. What time does it start, and where is it going to be happening?
The 70s party starts at 7 p.m. at the Baranoff.
Sounds fun.
Yep.
Do the hustle on down to the Baranoff this Saturday.
Get your platform shoes out. And
have you been studying 70s things?
Sure.
I've looked on YouTube to figure out how to do the hustle.
Want to do it right here in the studio?
No. I need to practice more when I get my platform shoes in the mail.
Christy, Jerry, Melissa Loken, and Amanda Brew, thank you so much for coming down and talking about the Coast Guard 70s party happening at the Bear Enough Hotel this Saturday, September 24th, 7:30.
7 o'clock.
Okay, well, thank you for coming down. Let's
thanks,
play
thank you.
Thank you.
A little bit of this piece of music here that was suggested, I think, yesterday by Christy.
Yep. Enjoy.
Some hot chocolate. Thanks to Ricky D for helping point that direction. Time is 3:14 and you are tuned to KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. In the studio with me now is Katrina Pearson from Hearthside Books here to talk about book groups and banned books week. Katrina, thank you very much for coming down to the station today.
Hi, Jeff. Thanks for having me.
So book groups. First, about how many book groups are there in Juneau?
Well, what we know about, I would say over a dozen, maybe over two dozen. There are quite a few book groups in Juneau.
What do book groups do exactly?
Well, the idea of a book group is to get together with maybe friends that you like and invite some new people. You read the same book and then you discuss. And often book groups will couple that discussion with food and wine and, you know, they meet maybe once a month or so to discuss the book that they've chosen.
Are they run formally or informally?
Most that we know of are informal and they meet in people's homes.
What kind of books do they read, and are there any popular genres in particular?
You know, I'm always surprised. We do have a book group order program at the bookstore, and we do order a lot of contemporary fiction for book groups, but there are some book groups that are sort of branching out, and we have ordered nonfiction books, books on current events. There are a couple of book groups who order spiritual and religious titles, so it really is sort of across the board.
When I think about book groups, I think about an adult version of book reports, and I know I was hated to do book reports in high school and junior high, but it seemed kind of fun to go over books with your friends.
Yeah, I think it's a great way to get together with folks. And, you know, after talking to people that are in book groups, one of the things that people like about a book group is that it forces you to read outside of your comfort zone. So maybe you have six or eight people in your group, and primarily maybe six of those people always choose a fiction book. But when it comes time for that other person to choose their title, they choose something that maybe those six folks wouldn't have chosen to read. And so they're, you know, they're really kind of broadening their horizons.
What do they do in a book group? You know, have you been to one of these meetings where they wear dark hoods and things like that?
I don't believe so, but I haven't really been to one. I was in a book group years ago, and like I said, it's just a good time for people to get together. You know, you read the same thing, and you have very interesting discussions because everyone's perspective on the same title is going to be totally different.
Do you know how they choose the books?
Some groups, I think, actually vote, and then some groups, they just take turns. You know, one month, one member will choose, and they do sort of a round robin.
But how big are book groups?
Well, it depends on the group. I expect when they start, they can be quite small, you know, 2, 4, 6 people, and maybe grow to 12 or 15 people, depending on how well they get along, maybe.
How does Hearthside facilitate them?
Well, we have a book group ordering program where if you order your book group titles from us, we do offer you a discount. And then we also have a quarterly drawing for a gift card for our book group customers. This Sunday, we're actually holding a special book group event called a bevy of book groups, and it's going to be Sunday at our Nugget Mall store from 2 to 4. And we thought it would be a great way to facilitate discussions of new titles that book groups might want to choose. So we're inviting people in a book group to join us. We're also inviting people that might be looking for a book group to join us. Sharon Gateman is going to kind of MC the afternoon, and so we're going to talk about books. We're going to have some snacks, wine, and it'll hopefully be a great way for people to gather some new ideas.
And that's this weekend at Hearthside Books in the Valley?
Yeah, Sunday afternoon.
What time?
2 to 4.
What's the best way to start one if people, I guess they can come Sunday and find out more information about it?
Yeah, they can come Sunday. And I think the easiest way for a book group to start is, you know, you look around your circle of friends and people that maybe have the same interests, and that's a very good starting point.
Let's talk about banned books now.
Yes, banned books.
Banned Books Week is next week?
It starts this week. So it starts on Saturday. It's September 24th through October 1st this year. And it's been going now for over 25 years.
How does a book get banned?
Well, normally a book is chosen for its content, and there's the kind of three top reasons that a book is banned, and the big three are sex, violence, and language. And normally it will be a very standard sort of book banning or book challenge will come from a parent. Maybe their child has checked something out and they brought it home and the parent found it offensive, and they want to remove it from circulation or remove it from the library.
Are they usually successful?
Not as much as they used to be, I think. Often, books will be challenged, and the library, the institution, will retain the title. But banning is still going on, and I think that's the interesting thing about Banned Books Week is censorship in regards to books is still happening. And we don't hear about it as much as we used to. And so it's important, we think at Hearthside, it's important to, you know, bring that to the forefront once a year and say, you know, yes, this is still happening. And take a look at, you know, what books are still being banned. And so we do these big window displays at both stores, and we fill them with books that have been banned or challenged. And we hand out lists to people, and it's really fascinating because you can see all of these things that you've read probably and enjoyed and learned from are on these lists, cited for being offensive to one group or another.
What are some famous banned books in history?
Well, you know, historically, almost all of the classics. I mean, maybe not all, but a majority of classics, you know, Steinbeck and Dickens, and the Harry Potter books. have all been banned or challenged, and the Bible has come up on the list year after year.
Is there a list this year?
There is a list this year, and I have like a top 10 list.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like me to read that?
Sure, yeah.
Okay.
Let's get to the dirt here.
Let's get into the nitty-gritty. The top 10 list for 2010, the first one is titled And Tango Makes Three. Next one, Absolutely True Diary of a Part-Time Indian, Brave New World, Crank, The Hunger Games, Lush, What My Mother Doesn't Know, Nickel and Dimed, Revolutionary Voices, and Twilight. And if you look at this list, you can see that a good portion of these are actually, you know, like young adult novels. And often, you know, when these things are challenged, the idea is that children are being protected from content. But the interesting thing about a couple of these titles, like Twilight and The Hunger Games, is they're really crossover titles, and more adults are reading this fiction, too. So, you know, if you take it away from kids, you know, you're going to be taking these titles away from adults as well.
Seems like there might be a book group that specializes in banned books.
Oh, that's a terrific idea.
You know, but we were just talking about this before, whether there may be a book group on the Internet.
Yeah, you know, I don't know of one, and I expect you could do, you know, some kind of long-distance book group. I know often when I have friends in other places, we do a lot of chatting about books, but that's a good idea.
All right, Katrina Pearson talking about Banned Books Week and book groups here. Your event for the book groups is this Sunday afternoon at the Horsehead Books in the Valley. What time again is that?
2 to 4.
All right.
Okay.
Anything you'd like to add? I might have forgotten to ask.
Well, Banned Books Week starts on Saturday. So if you stop by either store on Saturday, you can take a look at the displays, and we'll have more information on our website, which is hearthsidebooks.com. Or people are more than welcome to just give us a call.
Katrina, thank you so much for coming down the station.
All right. Thanks, Jeff.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, September the 21st, 2011. Some anniversaries in the world of publishing. The most famous, most reprinted newspaper editorial published on this day, 1897, the Yes, Virginia, There Is a Santa Claus column in the New York Sun in response to a letter from an 8-year-old girl in New York City. Is there a Santa Claus? The reporter Francis Church wrote his famous reply to little Virginia O'Hanlon, saying, he exists as certainly as love and generosity and devotion exist, and you know that they abound and give your life its highest beauty and joy. Alas, how dreary would be the world if there were no Santa Claus. It would be as dreary as if there were no Virginias. Virginia lived at 115 West 95th Street in New York, and she grew up to be a schoolteacher in New York City. 1970, on this date, the New York Times came out with a new section called the Op-Ed page, opposite the editorial page, devoted to the columns of outside writers. It's the birthday of the man who created Penguin Books, Sir Alan Lane, born Bristol, England, 1902. 1935, he was waiting for a train, looking for something to read on the train. All he could find was magazines and reprints of Victorian novels, and he came up with the idea of publishing low-quality volumes of great contemporary fiction, hoping to democratize literature. It's the birthday of Herbert George Wells, H.G. Wells, born Brumley, England, 1866, one of the fathers of modern science fiction, who wrote The Time Machine, The Island of Dr. Moreau, and The War of the Worlds. H.G. Wells, a socialist with a strong interest in biology. He died just before his 80th birthday, having lived long enough to see much of the future he had imagined in the real world. And it's the birthday of Stephen King, born Portland, Maine, 1947. Graduated from college, worked in an industrial laundry for a year, then got a job teaching high school English, and 2 years later he sold the paperback rights for his first novel, Carrie, which enabled him to quit his job and write full-time. The author of over 50 bestsellers, his most recent, Full Dark, No Stars, a collection of 4 stories, and this fall he will publish 11-22-63, a novel about Kennedy's assassination. Stephen King, who said the road to hell is paved with adverbs. Here's a poem for today by Mary Ruffo, Magnificat. O Lord, I did walk upon the earth, and my footprints did keep pace with the rain, and I did note where orange birds flew up from the puddles thou hast made, and where the toads leaped from your trenches, but nowhere was there that I could go, for I could not rise from the firmament upon which I was placed, and nowhere could I. So I kept until I could no more straight, then bent, said, I am down to make room for the more, and you, half-hearing, did send me down into the soul of another by mistakes, and I would like to thank you for it from where I lie, risen in the eye of the other. Magnificat by Mary Ruffo from her selected poems, published by Wave Books and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, where your mobile device can turn into a virtual poetry library with the Poetry Foundation's poetry app. You can find it online at poetryfoundation.org. Edited by Noah Smith, written by Heather McPherson. Be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
Alaska writer laureate Peggy Shoemaker presents Geographies of the Land and of the Heart at the next evening at Egan at the University of Alaska Southeast. Shoemaker will read from her prose memoir, Just Breathe Normally, and her poetry collection, Gnawed Bones, followed by discussion on the writing life in Alaska. Friday, September 23rd, 7 p.m. at the UAS Egan Lecture Hall, free and open to the public.
Thank you. old-fashioned two-step. We'll dance them nice and close. Rock it good and slow. You step and pause. That's all you have to do. Just like you stuck with blue.
And you are tuned to KTVO News in Juno here on a Juno afternoon. Our next guest here to talk about high school football, Jerick Avias, who's an offensive running back. He's a senior. And also Dylan Skrzynski, a defensive linebacker, also a senior. Thank you very much for coming down to the station today, gang.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So in general, how does the team look this year?
There we go. We're kind of the same as last year, really fast. And there's not much size besides, like, Bubbles. But we're definitely fast, and we can get to the ball quick.
You have some strong players?
Yeah, very. Like I mentioned, Bubbles in L.A., he's very strong. He's probably about 350. He put up a lot of weight. And even our smaller guys can put up a lot. They can hold their own.
Jerick, you're an offensive running back. Tell me what an offensive running back does.
Well, we do a lot. We can run the ball and go out for routes, but also have to block for our quarterback and make sure he doesn't get touched at all by the defensive linemen or linebackers.
Dylan, you're a defensive linebacker yourself. What does a defensive linebacker do?
Well, we stop the run first, and we watch the pass, but our first priority is to fill that hole.
How do you stop the run?
We all have our assignments, but the linebacker goes up and fills the middle, hey, yeah.
You have some new team members on the team?
Yeah. One of our wide receivers, our starting receiver, Alec Callaway, he plays basketball, and then he decided to come out his senior year and play for us, and he's been pretty good.
How long have you been playing football?
I've been playing for 12 years.
I've been playing for about 9 years.
What's exciting about football to you guys?
I don't know, just the adrenaline on game day.
I see the coach is just coming around the corner here.
All right.
And the dreadful pause. Come on in, Rich. Rich Soros is the head coach for the high school football team. Thank you very much for coming down the station, Rich.
Yeah, you bet. Glad to be here.
So I asked these other guys out there, the team was doing, in your opinion, how's the team looking this year?
Well, we're coming together. You know, we're getting into that home stretch of the regular season, so this is kind of where you start set your pecking order in the conference as to who's going to be playing in the postseason and who's going to be looking to next year. And it looks like we're in a good position to make it to that second set of games in the postseason, so things are going well.
How do you size up the competition?
Well, our conference is getting better every year. It used to be that Anchorage kind of ruled the stay with the bigger schools, but over the last 6-7 years, our conference has really gotten some momentum with some, you know, a lot of new kids moving into the state up in Fairbanks and the Matsu Valley, and I think the Railville Conference from top to bottom is as good as probably any conference out there as far as competition week in, week out.
Do you have specific strategies for each opponent?
Oh, yeah, based on, you know, what their strengths are and how we match up and, you know, kind of even what surface you're playing on. You know, some of our games are on the field turf that we have here in Juneau, and some of our games are on natural grass, so we have to kind of take that into account when we're game planning as far as the size of the team that we're going up against and just all the variables.
How much of the game is mental compared to physical?
Well, I think it depends what time of year. Early in the year, it's more physical, and then later in the year, it's more mental because early in the year, you're trying to develop the team, mold the kids, get the chemistry, and that takes a lot of repetitions and things to do that. Once you establish that, then and you've achieved your fitness level that you're kind of have later in the year, a lot of your preparation is strategic, and that takes more of a mental thing to kind of be able to sit through that and not let yourself get distracted and, you know, lose your focus.
What kind of life lessons does football teach?
Well, I think it teaches you, you know, commitment, you know, dedication, work ethic, just overall, just, I mean, there's a lot of them. I can go through a whole list, but I think, you know, right off the bat, those are some of the big ones that come to mind.
Tell me about this game, this week's games.
This one. We're going to be bringing in West Valley. They're turning into one of the top-tier teams in our conference, especially this year. They've got a lot of good players and a good scheme, and they're going to come down here to Juneau with a chance to win their first conference title, and they'll have to go through us to do it. And I think it's going to be probably one of the best football games this town's been able to witness in the last 15 years.
What is that?
Well, just because of the, you know, there's only happened twice before in school history. We've had a team for 21 years, and only two other times has there ever been a home game where the winner wins the conference title. I mean, we've won the title here before, but the team that we're playing against didn't have the same thing at stake as we do. And in this game, we both have the same thing at stake, that if West Valley wins the game, they're the conference champs. We win the game, we're the conference champs. So when you have that at stake for both teams this late into the season like that, it's a pretty rare thing. And the fact that it's our senior night, and if we win the game, we'll have a chance to play a home playoff game, which is also a, you know, a great thing to have. You don't get those very often. It's just hard to do. You have to be one of the top two teams in your conference to host a playoff game. So we would achieve that goal. And then second thing is for those seniors is if we didn't win that game Saturday, then that will be the last time they play a home game on that field. So it's I got a lot of emotion going into Saturday night.
What time does the game start, and how much does it cost to get in?
Well, it's $8 to get in for an adult, $5 for a kid. It starts at 8 p.m. Saturday night. If you do arrive by halftime of the JV game, you get in for $5. So you save a few bucks if you want to come a little early and watch the second half of the JV game. That's the cost and time, and it's at Adair Kennedy Football Field, and it should be an exciting night of football.
I talked to Derek and Dylan about the strong two players and new team members. Do you have anything to add to that?
What'd you say about that? What was that?
Who are the strong players for your team?
Oh, for our team?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, we've got quite a few guys, actually. You know, these guys sitting here are a couple of our real veterans. Derek's leading the team in rushing this year, and Dylan's really been one of our good inside linebackers this year, and it'll be good to get him back in the lineup. He's been out the last couple games getting his leg healed up, and he'll be back on the field this week. And we've got a quarterback that's doing quite well this year, and some good receivers and a couple good linemen. So, yeah, I mean, as a whole, it's a pretty good group of kids.
All right. I've been talking to Rich Soros and Jerry Kibbias and Dylan Skaminsinski. They've been members of the football team. Rich, you're the head coach. How many coaches are there?
Oh, at the varsity level, we have six, and then at the JV level, four or five guys there. So about 10 or 11 coaches altogether.
How do they split up the jobs?
Well, we have at the varsity level, we've got the head coach, then we've got an offensive coordinator, kind of puts the offense together, and a defensive coordinator that handles the defensive side of the ball. And then we have a couple of line coaches that work. One specializes kind of more on the offensive side of the line, and the other one the defensive side of the line. And then we have a special teams coach that also assists in kind of the trainer's duties as well. And then he kind of helps out in other areas with the running backs and different things like that. So that's at the varsity level. And then the JV level, kind of the same format. You just kind of have a head coach, a couple of coordinators, and then guys that kind of assist them to kind of put the whole package together.
Jarek and Dylan, what do you like about football?
Like I was saying, like on game day, the adrenaline and just feeling the ball in your hands and just being able to make plays, that's why I like it.
I like it a lot because of the commitment it teaches me, and because I can never get enough of football. It's just something I've always really done since I was a kid.
And you're both seniors. Are you thinking of going to college and playing football in college as well?
Yeah, I'm hoping to go to the next level, maybe get a scholarship, and just probably playing in a good school, something that'll fit for me.
I don't think I'm going to play college ball.
All right, Dylan, Jarek, and Rich, thank you so much for coming down to the station today. That time once again for the game on Saturday, please?
It'll be 8 o'clock. JV games at 5 p.m. varsity game, 8 p.m. at Adair Kennedy Football Field.
All right, good luck with the plays and your team.
Okay. Hey, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Time is 3:42, and you are tuned into KTOO News in Juneau here on a Juneau afternoon. Next guests are Sean McCall and Joe Carson. They're going to be playing at the Island Pub on Saturday and Sunday. We'll be featuring a little live music today in the studio for us. Sean?
Howdy. Well, Joe's going to put the microphone back on its stand here.
The microphone.
You can dress us up, but you can't take us very far. That's because I'm from Maine. Anybody got any duct tape out there? Okay, we're having a slight technical difficulty, but
that's okay.
Joe being the true professional he is, he's going to figure it out.
Yeah.
Maybe just put it on the counter here.
Yeah. Sorry,
sir. All right, we'll figure it out.
Baby, knock on my door. Why was it so loud? Somebody said, "Hey, honey, you know we broke the rules." Why was somebody up against that law? Hey, honey, you know I would die for you. Ashes of laughter, they tell me that coast is clear. Why do the best things that always disappear just like Ophelia? Why, baby, come back home. I cried that whole night long. I'll do the dishes while I'm trying to pay the rent. I know that I have done you wrong. Remember that rainy evening I put you out with nothing but a slide trombone. I said, ain't that a shame? Bill Bailey on the blind. Bill Bailey, won't you please come home? Remember that rainy evening I put you out with nothing but a slight jumbo. I said, ain't that a shame? Bill Bailey on the blind. Bill Bailey, won't you please come home? Why wasn't some mad somebody said, heck, honey, no, we broke the rules. Why was somebody up against that law? Why, honey, you know, hey, I'd die for you. Ashes and laughter, please tell me that coast is clear. Why do the best signs that always disappear just like Ophelia? Why, baby, come back home.
Music in the studio from Sean McCall and Joe Carson. Sean, thank you very much for coming down the station and playing.
Sure. Well, thanks for having me.
So you're from Seattle in the Lummi Island area?
Yeah. I've been there for about the last 9 years.
What got you started in music?
Excuse me?
What got you started in music?
Oh, I started as a kid. I kind of liked it. And the first time I ever played in front of a crowd, I really liked it. And then I became a street musician in 1975. And I really liked it because I was making money, so I guess putting them all together, it worked well.
What's the secret for being a successful street musician?
To have fun and to convey fun to people and to play for people, not for yourself. I look people in the eye. I say thank you. I try to say thank you to every donation. And when we have the band in Pike's Place Market, one of us says thank you. And every time someone gives a donation or buys a CD or something, just to make sure everybody knows that we're grateful and hopefully they're grateful too.
Sean and Joe are playing this weekend at the Island Pub on Saturday and Sunday night. What time are you performing?
Saturday night, it's 8 to 11, and Sunday, it's 7 to 10. So people can get up and go to work on Monday, like me.
Sean, you dropped out of school at the 8th grade. What made you do that? Was that a hard decision?
No, I was in a bad place, in a bad school, and it just seemed to make more sense. I was called work study. I was only 15 years old, and they said as long as I held a full-time job, I could do this, and it worked out tremendously and taught me many skills that I use every day in the course of my profession and got me away from a place that was in the 60s when school could be a dangerous, if not debaucherous, place. So.
From my understanding, you're pretty relaxed and easygoing. Do you have a basic philosophy that runs through your music?
No, I just love life. It's basically don't worry, be happy is actually a Indian spiritualist saying, not a song by a famous musician, and that became kind of my mantra in the beginning. And no matter how things are, they could certainly be worse. So it's not whether your cup is half full or half empty. If you've got a cup, it's up to you to make sure what's in it. So,
tell me about your banjo.
This is an old Fairbanks. I had a friend that owned a music store in South Paris, Maine, and I was a horse logger most of my life, and he hated cutting firewood as most musicians do, so I traded every year we played Let's Make a Deal. I traded a cord and a half of firewood for this banjo probably 32 years ago, and she's fallen off a car in a Naugahyde gig bag. I had to El Cabong somebody once in a subway station, and she's still here playing, so she got a blowout patch on. I wore a hole in the head, and I like this head so much I just glued a blowout patch on it. And I guess the only banjo player I ever seen with a blowout patch. But
right, well, hopefully,
thank God for super glue.
Hopefully you won't have a blowout on Friday and Saturday, or excuse me, on Saturday or Sunday night.
She's good to go. And I also play a National Steel tenor guitar, and bought an accordion, which is will be featured on Saturday night with Joe playing guitar. We have a washtub bass player, and Ari Rome is going to join us on the dobro to round out our sound.
Could you describe your music?
I call it good time, old time music. I play a clawhammer style banjo, but it's not a straight traditional clawhammer style. I sing a lot of John Prine is one of my favorite songwriters, David Allan Coe. I mix that with folk music. I like songs with messages. I don't sing songs with bad connotations or bad words. I like a song to be something you can remember and whistle and sing along with and make the world a better place.
What can we expect this weekend?
Oh, a little bit of everything. Like I say, with the little national, it's a little more boogie-woogie. We do from King of the Road to some country blues standards. On the button accordion, I play a lot of polkas, play some Irish music, some waltzes. Joe will sing a few. Ari's one of the most tremendous dobro players I've been blessed to play with, and so he will fill in all the edges. He's got the best sense of in and out. He's just, you wonder if he's, the microphone is on in between verses, and then when it's his time, his microphone is certainly on. He's one of the most gifted musicians I've. And this is a great part about coming here and traveling around everywhere I go. I generally, if I travel myself, I try to find other people to play with and have found some wonderful people in my life. And Juno has proved the same. It's been a joy playing with Joe all summer, and it'll be fun playing with Ari. Ari played a set with us at the Alaskan. We played the Alaskan all summer long kind of by accident. I'm here to be a carpenter and didn't even bring the accordion and wasn't going to bring the steel guitar. I didn't think I was going to play music, and thanks to Elgin, the patron saint of the Juno Jug Buskers, we've had a wonderful summer at the Alaskan. So
man,
now we're going to branch out to attack the rest of the town of Juno and Douglas.
Tell me a little bit more about street performing in the Pike Place Market.
It's one of the last acoustic strongholds of street music. If you go to San Francisco, Boston, Chicago, New Orleans, although New Orleans has an amplification law, but most of the places are just grossly over-amplified, and to me, that's not the art of being a street musician. The art of being a street musician is taking your instrument out of your case and performing for people and being good enough or dynamic enough or whatever the reason is to make it work. And if it doesn't, then attrition usually makes you go find something else. But Pike's Place is, there's rules and a permit, and which many people don't like, but it's been a great place. I've been playing there for 10 years, and It's in Boston. We have the equivalent, which is called Faneuil Hall, but Faneuil Hall is an auditioned and scheduled place where every month you get your monthly schedule and they tell you the times that you play. And I let my permit go years ago, and the last time I tried, they auditioned 105 people for two positions. So it's really, really hard to get in there. And the thing about Pike's Place is that good, bad, or indifferent, you're allowed the chance to play. And if you're really not that good at it, sooner or later you give up because you don't make any money and you feel funny. But it's brought some tremendous musicians there.
I remember Baby Gramps.
Yep, Gramps, artist, the Spoon Man, my fiddle player myself. I play the fiddle player on my CD and the other half thereof of the ballad of Jug Buskers is Joe Fulton, and if anybody remembers the Tall Boys, it came up 2 years ago at the Folk Festival. Joe was a fiddle player also for the Tall Boys, so Joe, myself, and a washtub bass player have been the ballad of Jug Buskers for the last 10 years, and Joe and I, an artist, had the highest hourly percentage money. I won't mention the amount, but we played in front of Starbucks, and it was the most anybody had made for three people in that one time. Artist is Spoon Man, but there's also a great band there, the Millionaires Club, our friend Jake Landry, and great clarinet player Craig, and a bass player. It's the kind of place that brings quality people to hang around. There's Moment in Time, a great a cappella group. There's some really class acts that go there. And in the summertime, it's a great way to make a living. The money is tremendous. We've sold over 5,000 of our CDs in the past few years there. And it's just people leave with a smile, you know, and it's the fun part. When you play in a club, people are there for many other reasons. But when you play in the street, if you have a crowd, and often we stop all of Pike's Place Market, our crowds are so big, and actually security has kind of gotten after us, and now it takes two security guys to keep the road open when we play. But that's a great measure of the fact that people are liking what you're doing, because they were walking by. Nobody came there to see you or for the reason of hearing music. They're here to just go around and shop. So when you stop people into having that time of their life, that really, it makes me feel great that what I'm doing is working, because that's what I like to do. I like to play for people. There's a lot of people play at home for themselves, but I'm a performer, have been a performer all my life, so I find my favorite way to apply my trade.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been a professional street musician since 1975.
I'm talking to Sean McCool here along with Joe Carson and the friends who are performing at the Ireland Pub on Saturday and Sunday. The hours again for Saturday and Sunday's performance?
Excuse me?
The hours again for Saturday and Sunday?
Saturday night is 8 to 11 and Sunday is 7 to 10.
All right, how about another tune?
Okay, let's do Grandpa. Okay. In C.
Yeah, sure.
Grandpa wore his suit to dinner nearly every day, for no particular reason, why he just liked it that way. Brown necktie and a matching vest and both his wingtip shoes. Built a closet on the back porch, put a penny in a burnout fuse. Grandpa was a carpenter, he built houses, doors, and bikes. Chain-smoked Camel cigarettes, hammered nails, and planks. He was level on the level, why shaved each and every dome. And he voted prizing high, cause Lincoln won the war. He used to sing Blood on Sal, he'd rock beyond his knee. Never listened to the radio before we got TV. He'd drive to church every Sunday, he'd take me with him too. Stained glass in every window, hearing aids in every pew. And Grandpa was a carpenter, he built houses, doors, and mics. Chain smoked Camel cigarettes, hammered nails and pipes. He was level on the level, while shaved each and every door. And he voted rising high, cause Lincoln won the war.
This is a broadcast on these translators. In the Jalan North Bay area, tuned to Keechee 763 at 103.1. I'm in Estrella Creek, Keechee 690 at 101.7. The station listens on Keechee 01 AM 88.1, Keechee 20 PG 91.9. The station number tonight is Keechee 01 and Keechee 90 89.9. You can also receive KTUO on DTH Cable 290 channel 881 or survive online at www.ktuo.org.
Well, Robert E. Lee and Sarah Palin probably would go together well on a ticket.
All right, thanks very much for coming down, guys.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Jeff.
Tonight's League of Women Voters Juno Municipal Candidate Forum tonight from 7 to 9 o'clock live from the Assembly Chambers on KTOO News. Tomorrow on a Juno afternoon, we'll find out about Friday and Saturday's Alaska Preparedness Expo with guest Tom Matisse. Rebecca Noon in Boston will be here to discuss Chris Williams Theater's production of The 39 Steps. We'll also learn what to do with your junk and how to turn it into art with guest M. Kim McNunn from the Canvas. And Nancy DeShuni will be here with news and views about local art activities during Arts Up. It's tomorrow 3 here on KTOO News in Juno. Next, all things considered, with the forecast for tonight, looks like there's a high wind warning in effect until 8 p.m. this evening. There is a forecast windy and rain heavy at times with low temperatures around 46 degrees. Forecast for Thursday showers in the morning becoming scattered in the afternoon. Thursday night a chance of rain in the evening, then rain later on. Forecast for rain for Friday looks like rain, and Friday night rain as well.